Hey, this is Eric Benson, the host of Climify, a podcast that connects design educators with climate experts to help bring more climate-safe projects into our design classrooms. Through my conversations with these climate leaders, I hope to help you climify your syllabi and to create the next generation of climate designers. In fact, at the end of each program, my guest co-creates a design assignment for you to bring into your classroom for your students. This season, we are talking to women leading the way in climate action through the lens of each of the drawdown.org solution sectors. You can tune in to Climify anywhere you get your podcasts or directly at climatedesigners.org/edu/Climify. And we'd love if you join in the conversation on Instagram or LinkedIn at Climify Podcast.
This is Incomplete Design History, a podcast that explores overlooked and ignored topics in graphic design history. It is our goal to deepen and expand the knowledge, understanding, and interpretation of design history. Because history is messy. It's incomplete. Thank you for joining us today. I'm your host, Mandy Horton. Inspired by the African-American Civil Rights Movement, El Movimiento, or the Chicano Movement, emerged in the 1960s and 70s. Chicanos and Chicanas, being the chosen identity label some Mexican-Americans took, came together in a new shared identity to fight for social and political empowerment. They called for pan-Latino identity and solidarity. Chicano artists, especially printmakers, produced work that channeled the movement's cries of civil rights, labor, anti-war, feminism, and LGBTQ+ rights. Although the movement worked for the progression and respect for all Chicanos, the movement was overwhelmingly male-dominated. Yolanda Margarita Lopez was one of the artists and activists to come out of the Chicano movement. She was an American painter, printmaker, educator, and film producer known for her works that focused on the experiences of Mexican-American and Chicano women and challenged the ethnic stereotypes associated with them. Lopez's grandparents immigrated to the United States from Mexico. They crossed the Rio Bravo by boat and dodged Texas Ranger gunfire. She was the eldest with two younger siblings. They were raised by her mother, who worked as a sweatshop seamstress, and her maternal grandparents in San Diego, California. Lopez went to school in Logan Heights, San Diego. As an adult, she moved to San Francisco, where she attended the College of Marin and San Francisco State University. She was involved with the Third World Liberation Front school and was part of the 1968 Third World Liberation Front strike. The Third World Liberation Front was a coalition of different minority student unions that came together in 1968 at San Francisco State University to call for campus reform. The coalition led one of the longest student strikes in U.S. history. The strikes were pivotal for universities across the country to start implementing ethnic and other identity studies. It was in San Francisco where she became active in the arts and politics. As a third-generation Chicana, she challenged ethnic stereotypes in her work and empowered Chicana women to fight machismo, the sexist belief that men were superior to women, and other stereotypes in Mexican culture. Yolanda Lopez believed art should be created to serve the people. One of Lopez's earliest protest pieces was Free Los Siete, produced in 1969. It's a black-and-white poster defending Los Siete de la Reza, seven Central American youths, aged 16 to 20, falsely accused of killing police officer Joseph Brodnick in San Francisco on May 1, 1969. They were eventually found not guilty. Their 18-month trial was a turning point and a point of unification in the political consciousness of the Latin community in the Bay Area. The arrest of Los Siete, combined with the frequent police brutality in the 60s and 70s, racist media portrayals of people of color, and the military response to community activism in protest to the war in Vietnam, united San Francisco leftists to rally in support of the seven accused. Looking at the Free Los Siete poster again, you see Lopez uses the stripes of the American flag as prison bars, with six of the seven men accused behind the bars. Only six of the youths are shown because one of the accused was never apprehended. The poster highlights the meaninglessness of having patriotism and the flag, as the freedom Americans speak of and advocate for never includes civil rights and freedoms of systemically oppressed minorities. Lopez also writes out the Pledge of Allegiance on the poster in the border and leaves out certain phrases and words to show the hypocrisy of the pledge. Lopez commonly uses borders and frames in her work to represent seeking freedom or lack of freedom. The poster was widely circulated in community newspapers and used in protest. Yolanda always embraced her work being used unsigned for protest. As she put it, the streets were my gallery, posters, leaflets, lapel buttons, and graphic art for neighborhood newspapers. She did another poster for Los Siete titled Libertad para Los Siete, which called for the police to bring the seven youths back home to the Mission District, then a predominantly Latin neighborhood. The poster depicts the neighborhood as a sanctuary, a different perspective from the crime-ridden stereotype the neighborhood used to have. In the bottom left corner, you see a barefoot child in a style that is reminiscent of Diego Rivera reading a book with the words, Free Los Siete. Lopez was one of the original members of the group that called themselves Los Siete, a defense committee formed to rally in the defense for the seven accused. And it was all the work for Los Siete that solidified for Lopez that combining her activism with her art would be the trajectory she wanted to continue for the future of her career. The Los Siete Defense Committee was pivotal in bringing the Third World Internationalism ideologies to the Chicano movement, using terms like Raza to bring people together to fight their oppressors. Raza meant one people in this political context. It isn't a term used widely anymore, as activists have shied away from rhetoric that implies Latins are one race. The Los Siete Defense Committee created a movement newspaper called Basta Ya. The newspaper updated the local community in the Mission District, San Francisco, on relevant political and cultural news and the ongoing case of Los Siete. Lopez designed the masthead for the newspaper and many of its covers. Chicana activist Donna Amador was the editor. It was during El Movimiento that many of the symbols and graphics that identify the Chicano movement came about. The look of the Basta Ya newspaper was changing and evolving at the time that other symbols, like the Black Aztec Eagle of Cesar Chavez's United Farm Workers movement, was also evolving. The Black Aztec Eagle started out as a sketch by Chavez's cousin and was intended to be easily drawn for all farm workers to reproduce in protest. The eagle and flag evolved from a hand-drawn look to a more polished eagle that was used widely in protest during the Chicano movement. While they were involved with Basta Ya, Lopez and Amador learned low-cost layout techniques from artist and activist Emery Douglas, who was the Minister of Culture for the Black Panther Party. Douglas is credited with shaping the impactful graphic identity of the Black Panther Party through visuals of Black struggle and liberation. He showed Lopez how to take the borders from the San Francisco Chronicle and adhere them to the Black Panther newspaper at the printers. Douglas's emphasis on the lives of everyday Black people influenced Lopez, who in turn wanted to use art as a means to empower the Latin community facing similar struggles. The Black Panther newspaper featured Lopez's illustrations and advertised the Basta Ya newspaper on the back page. One of Lopez's other successful political works was a poster she titled, Who's the Illegal Alien, Pilgrim? Produced in 1978, the poster came during a period of political debate in the U.S., which resulted in the passage of the Immigration and Nationality Act amendments of 1978. The law capped immigration from a single country at 20,000 people per year, with a total yearly limit of 290,000 people. The poster depicts an indigenous Aztec man holding a newspaper with a headline about Jimmy Carter's immigration plan, while in the same pose with the pointing finger and stare from James Montgomery Flagg's world-famous World War I recruiting poster, Uncle Sam Wants You. The man is coming out of the frame in the poster, a purposeful technique to give him more presence and power and to show how he is breaking out of social convention to speak a message. The poster was a reminder to the American public. While they believe themselves more entitled to the U.S., many of the immigrants they were complaining about, mostly from Latin America, were historically here first, along with the rest of the indigenous people of what is now North, Central, and South America. Recognizing the history of Latins with mixed indigenous ancestry, as well as the resilient and very much existing native communities from south of the border, is still a relatively new conversation here in the United States. So you can only imagine the conversations it generated in 1978. Lopez was a strong third world feminist influenced by pan-Latino identity. She supported the deoccupation of Guatemala and supported coalition building with the Asian and African American communities in California. It is important to note that Lopez's activism did not represent the entirety of the Chicano movement. In fact, her hometown in San Diego was hesitant to support pan-Latino identity and focused mostly on Chicano nationalism. Even Cesar Chavez, who is considered one of the leaders of the Chicano movement, was xenophobic. He used much of the same derogatory language most Americans use towards undocumented migrants and advocated for their deportation, claiming it was the only way strikes could succeed. The United Farm Workers even worked with Border Patrol to help catch undocumented migrants while crossing. Even with her political work in San Francisco and her feminist and non-Chicano exclusive Latino activism, which was a breath of fresh air in the Chicano movement, Lopez still struggled to fit in and find her place with her peers. Lopez and other female Los Siete Defense Committee members attended the Second International Women's Conference in 1971 to get new ideas and meet like-minded individuals. They came back home to California inspired to ignite change and challenged the Los Siete Community Defense Group to reformulate their principles of unity and address issues of sexism in the organization. The newest leader of the group, Al Martinet, ignored the women and sent Lopez to work in the Levi Strauss garment factory to organize the women there, while the men were sent to organize the higher-paying job sectors. Lopez realized she was not going to be heard in this group and left the Los Siete Defense Committee to return to San Diego in 1971 to work on her art and image. She attended graduate school at the University of California at San Diego. Her graduate work became some of what Lopez is most well known for. Her three-part graduate project was a study of the image of Chicana women in mainstream American society. She first produced a collection of drawings that were larger than life size and were named Three Generations, Tres Mujeres, 1975 to 76. These 8-foot, realistic, non-idealized, monumental drawings of ordinary women depicted Lopez's grandmother, Victoria E. Franco, her mother, Margaret Stewart, and herself. As she explained in her 1978 graduate exhibition guide, the images work against traditional commercial stereotypes of Latina women, such as the sexy bombshell or the passive, long-suffering mother. She goes on to say that each woman addresses the fact that she is being observed. She is not shy or intimidated. The grand size of the image is complemented by the confidence each woman radiates, each in her own style. As Raza, as Chicanos, Latinos, we yearn to see ourselves reflected as part of humanity. In describing the image of grandmother, Lopez says that she is my grandmother, she is all of our grandmothers, and that qualities of life lived with dignity and self-respect are not limited to my family. They are qualities shared by many women who are not part of the majority culture's concept of being female or feminine. Lopez believed that art could be found in what resides in our own lives. The three portraits in the collection are three generations of women, just as normal and radiant as they are, but still powerful. For the second collection of her graduate series, she has her Adonde Vas Quechena series, known as the Runner series. The series is painted on canvas about 4 by 5 feet with acrylic and oil. The paintings depict her jogging. Lopez said the jogging was to, quote, lose weight and, quote, gain control of her body. In each painting, Lopez depicts herself as a runner wearing shorts and a t-shirt. Sun casts shadows on her form as she runs by the Mandeville Center in California. Lopez described the series from the perspective of a woman calling on her body in an assertive and physically disciplined manner as a power ally. Lopez states the significance of the series in her graduate exhibition guide. It is female. It is Chicana. It is self-portrait. The metaphor extends from the symbolic fortitude of women in the literal image of Chicana's struggle in a formidable institution. She compares a runner's short-lived speed with women's psychological and physical sustaining power of endurance in the painting and emphasizes that endurance is one of our greatest survival tools. Lopez is most known for her work that incorporates symbols and imagery from the famous Our Lady of Guadalupe paintings. Our Lady of Guadalupe is a Catholic title for Mary, Mother of Jesus, and has cultural significance in Latin America. According to the Catholic tale, Our Lady of Guadalupe first presented herself as the Mother of God and the Mother of all people when she appeared on the hill of Tepeyac in Mexico in 1531. An indigenous man who had converted to Catholicism named Juan Diego, who is the patron saint of indigenous people, saw her on the hill. After she introduced herself to him, Our Lady asked Juan to build her a shrine in the same spot in order for her to show and share her love, miracles, and compassion with those who believed and are in need. It is said that Our Lady performs miracles for marginalized people and protects them. Our Lady of Guadalupe, or the Virgin of Guadalupe, has remained an important cultural figure and patroness of Latin American culture, symbolizing the identity of Latin Americans and especially Mexicans. Lopez uses Our Lady of Guadalupe to challenge Chicano womanhood and sexism. For the third part of her graduate series, her work titled Our Lady of Guadalupe, an oil pastel series, Lopez reimagined a woman's dignity and value and honored all working-class Chicano women. The first studies for the series were done from copies of existing images, The Birth of Venus, Madonna Lytia, and the classic image of Guadalupe. Lopez often roughed out and planned her work by taping found images together. She created depictions of Our Lady of Guadalupe as an intellectual, working, complex, and moving woman, not as a stagnant and submissive figure. The collection provided Latinas a representation of the feminine divine that was separate from the Catholic institution. Lopez painted her mother, grandmother, and herself in the role of a liberated Guadalupe for this series. In the Margaret F. Stewart, Our Lady of Guadalupe, she painted her mother, who worked at a sewing factory, at her sewing machine, stitching gold stars of hope upon Our Lady of Guadalupe's robe. The image challenges concepts of beauty by romanticizing her beautiful mother, even though she does not fit the stereotypical image of the Latina woman represented in the media. We can see an angel with striped colors of the national flag of Mexico on their wings under the sewing machine. This replaces the angel under the robe of Our Lady of Guadalupe that we are used to seeing. In Grandmother, Our Lady of Guadalupe, we see Lopez's grandmother sitting on a throne-like chair with Guadalupe's robe and the same rays behind her as the other two portraits. Her grandmother has a wise expression on her face and holds a snakeskin and a knife. Lopez wanted to show the power and wisdom her grandmother holds. The painting Lopez is most known for from this series is called Self-Portrait, Our Lady of Guadalupe, also known as the portrait of the artist as the Virgin of Guadalupe. Lopez paints herself with a snake wearing the Our Lady of Guadalupe's robe, calling back to her lineage and the iconic religious imagery. In the self-portrait, she is running forward, representing how the new generation is running from social constructs. This is also a nod to Lopez's other identity as a long-distance runner. Lopez again used Our Lady of Guadalupe for reference in 1981 with her collage Eclipse from the Guadalupe series. The collage portrays the multiplicity of being Chicana and of Mexican origin and features a Mayan woman wearing Our Lady of Guadalupe's star-spangled robe over a huipil, which is a traditional indigenous shirt, breastfeeding a baby. The Mayan woman in the collage is framed with rays emerging out from her. Coming out from the frame and duplicated at the top is Lopez from Donde Vas Chicana. At the bottom, also emerging from the frame, is the original Our Lady of Guadalupe painting. Our Lady of Guadalupe is whole in the first depiction, but stripped away in the second. Lopez did this to emphasize how Our Lady of Guadalupe is completely covered, unable to run like the young Lopez from Donde Vas Chicana, or breastfeed like the Mayan woman. This is to show how women can be restricted by patriarchy and toxic Catholicism from being expressive and free. Both Guadalupes in the image don't even show skin. Meanwhile, the Chicana woman's brown legs and arms are exposed as she runs. Lopez's work with Our Lady of Guadalupe shaped a new way to look at Chicanas and Latinas and combated religious constraints and the stereotypes perpetuated in the media. In 1995, Lopez's print titled A Woman's Work is Never Done celebrates the toughness and resilience of working-class Latinas. The print combines a 1995 photograph of a group of women farm laborers from a California broccoli farm protesting against pesticides with a 1965 photograph depicting Dolores Huerta, the co-founder of the Agricultural Labor Union, United Farm Workers. The title of the piece plays on the saying describing the traditional women's continual work, as they are typically the homemakers and the ones who care for the family, often in addition to their occupational labor. Lopez takes this phrase and applies it to the workers' rights movement, showing how the women contributed to some of the early achievements in the farm workers' rights movement. Lopez contributed to the political and cultural shifts and accomplishments that came out of the Chicano movement. She used her art, printmaking, and poster design to advocate for the people of her community. Her work was a major voice during the trial of Los Siete and in later discussions on immigrants' rights and farm workers' rights advocacy. It reflected her support of Chicano women in finding a voice and brought forward new interpretations of Latin women that aren't sexualized or stereotyped. Yolanda Margarita Lopez passed away in 2014 and leaves behind a body of work that proves the history of Latin American art and design goes far beyond Frida Kahlo, Diego Rivera, and ancient Aztec and Mayan symbols. This episode was produced with the aid of a grant from the University of Central Oklahoma. This is a special contribution by an alumni from our graphic design program here at UCO, and the research and writing credits for this episode go to Esther Valesco. Esther reached out and asked if she could participate and develop an episode, and I am so glad that she did. Esther is not only a talented designer, but also a dedicated researcher, and we appreciate her contributions to the podcast. Story editing provided by Spencer Gee. Sound design and engineering by the University of Central Oklahoma Center for E-Learning and Connected Environments. Music by Christina Giacona and Patrick Conlin of Onyx Lane. If you would like to contact me about this episode or about the podcast, please email me at hello@idh.fm. That is hello@idh.fm. Our website can also be found at idh.fm. You can connect with us on Instagram @IncompleteDesignHistory. Please subscribe wherever you listen to your podcasts.